2015 nuclear deal with President Obama. The announcement comes a day after the Trump administration announced new sanctions on Tehran. National Security Advisor John Bolton in Jerusalem reacted to the news.
The threat of a nuclear Iran is very real, as are the threats of Iran's support for terrorism, its ballistic missile program, and its other malign activities in the Middle East.
This is USA Radio News.
If you're over the age of 50 and considering buying an annuity in the next 60 days, I have some important news for you. Don't buy an annuity until you understand the pros and cons of annuities. A free book to help you maximize your retirement income from television host and three-time author Josh Melberg has been released. This book reveals little-known truths about annuity strategies in simple-to-understand terms. Grab a pen right now, because we are about to offer you this free book that unlocks the five little-known secrets we believe baby boomers and seniors should know before buying an annuity. Call 800-985-1813 now, and you'll receive a free copy of Josh Milberg's book, Next Gen Annuity Strategies Revealed. As a bonus, we'll also send you a copy of The Number One Mistakes Retirees Are Making with Their Investments Today, and a free DVD on how you can get up to 33% more income in retirement. Call 800-985-1813 now. Again, that's 800-985-1813. Employees of J.D. Melberg Financial have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer.
Hey, this is Joe Peters with Real Estate Matters. And today we're going to have Al Ward dialing in. He's always an interesting person to talk to. Before we get to that, I'm going to do a few things, including the weather, and we'll be right back.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Here's our weather forecast. It is 88 degrees in scenic downtown Flemington. Today, just for a time stamp, is the 25th. We only have 6 months till Christmas. It's June 25th. It's 2019. It is somewhere around 4:05 p.m., and my name is Joe Peters. We're going to take a look at what's coming up the next few days. It doesn't look like we have any rain left in the week until Saturday, so enjoy the hot and summery weather. It's going to be in the 80s to the low 90s every day through Friday, and 66 roughly overnight every night. And then on Saturday, we get a rain shower. And still going to stay in the 88. So it sounds like summer is here. Let me play a few more commercials. I'm going to see if I can get Al on the line.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
So, Al, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, I've done everything right for a change. It usually takes me two or three tries. It's like learning something the first time.
I'm glad you're doing it and not me.
Yeah, I hear you. So, once again, my name is Joe Peters. You just heard my background information. I've got Al War on the phone. Al is a contributor to the Hunterdon County Democrat, which a lot of you have read his articles over time. And he writes freelance for a bunch of other opportunity as well. Al, give us a little about your background. How you got from when you graduated school to where you're at?
Oh, my goodness. that's a lot. My first job was with United Technologies in San Jose in California. I was a chemist, and they needed somebody to do some writing for proposals and reports and all that kind of stuff that understood the chemistry. And so the director of research hired me, and I stayed there for all during the 1960s.
Wow.
Went on to computers during that time and had an early immersion in computing technology. And so one of the things that we did was develop a management control system for projects in-house with the Air Force, the Navy, I don't know, NASA, whoever was interested in space travel in those days. And having that background, City Service in New York asked me to join them and computerize their Princeton labs. So I did that. They moved me to New York, and I was there for, I don't know, 5 years, and then they decided to leave New York and go to Tulsa, Oklahoma. So I told my wife, now's the time to start that business. So I started a printing business and had it for, I don't know, 20 years. After that, I did the Business Owners Institute in Bridgewater for 10 years. And so I've retired two or three times in my life, and retirement always lasts about 3 days.
Okay. I think that's a good sign.
Anyway, I still write for the paper. In fact, with the Hunterdon Democrat and NJ.com, I'm starting my 20th year with them every week.
Congratulations.
Starting next month, yeah. So that's a short bio.
Wow. And you work remotely. You're in Pennsylvania, I believe.
I work entirely at home these days.
Okay.
Everything is email, phone, whatever.
One of the leads group that I belong to, the insurance woman, says it really nicely. She says, people are lasting longer. And I'm saying, I resemble that remark because I'm in my 70s and I'm still working.
Hey, I'm thankful
full-time.
Every day I wake up.
I
turned 83 last month.
83, congratulations. So
I intend to be around another 20 years.
Good for you. And I know I'm in the Rotary, and every once in a while I'll volunteer for something over in Bridgewater. And then I say, you know what, my mind is writing checks that my body can't cash. There's just no way I can go out and do that.
Yeah, I work out in the yard a lot, and I have to remind myself I'm not 30 anymore.
I'm just early 40s.
Yeah.
That's an interesting. What was the first computer you ever worked on, Al?
monster. It was bigger than my house. It was a Burroughs, built in Philadelphia, and it worked on key punch cards. You remember those?
Yes,
things?
Yes. I grew up with that. People don't know what they are. I said it's like a paper tape record.
Yeah. You had to map everything out 2 or 3 days ahead, and then get the key punch people on it, and then feed the key punch into the computer, and hopefully you'd get something out that made sense.
That's amazing. I started in the 60s with Merck. It was Merck Sharp and Dohme at that point in time as a tabulator operator. So we had punch cards, and we had sorters and collators and reproducers and tabulating machines, and then they got into computers, and at about the time, they had a big 7074, which is probably one of the world's largest computers in the late 60s. But that was about the time I decided, good place to learn, not a good place to earn a big salary. And I went on to another company and got into the early 1400s and never looked back. I was always in retail, always in IT. It was never leading-edge technology, but it was still technology, and I loved it.
Yeah. I tell you, I remember the COBOL days and
yes.
Fortran and so forth. And these days, I think I have 5 computers in the house, and I don't know how any of them work.
I love it. It's like my telephone. People
it's
say
amazing
to me,
what's happened in the interim.
The car I bought as a leftover has a feature on for self parking, and I've had the car 10 months. Tried it. Okay, I haven't got the nerve to try it, let it self-park, much less self-drive.
Anytime they start wanting to do something for me and it's run by a chip somewhere, I'm a little apprehensive.
I'm going to try it, though. I mean, I'm inquisitive, but it's going to be in a parking lot, in a controlled environment, because especially that parallel parking, they're making the spaces smaller and the cars bigger. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Just like airline seats, they get smaller and smaller, and we stay the same size, plus we put a few pounds on every year.
I saw a blurb on TV the other day that said some airline somewhere was installing just a seat that you sort of, it's like one of the golf seats that you take around with you, you know, and three-prong thing that you can rest on.
Wow.
Not really a seat, but it's bad enough with the seats they have now, and I can only imagine what that would be like on a trip.
I'll tell you, we went out last 2 weeks ago. We got a new grandchild in L.A., so we took a 6 o'clock flight out on Sunday night and took the 8:15 back Wednesday morning. So we were there 2 solid days and 3 nights. I was on a 787. It had 3 rows on each side, 3 seats on each side, and like 5 or 6 in the middle. So I don't know what that all adds up to. A lot of seats across. I was in row 55, and there were still 20 rows behind me.
Yeah.
I've never
it's
seen a plane.
How many
I've flown
people
seven
get on those planes these days.
747s. I've flown a lot. They're now obsolete, and this was much bigger than a 747. It was just truly an Airbus. Every 2 hours, a plane leaves Newark full to go to LAX, and every 2 hours, one comes back.
They
just do this day after day after day, and we use up some miles to do it, which seem to disappear overnight anyway. I used to accumulate them, and they were there, and every time I look, half of them have expired. But I said to Marilyn, why spend the money? These are going to disappear anyway. Let's use them up.
Use them up, yeah.
So we got a new grandchild. It was really neat to hold this little pink bundle of life up next to you and hear the gurgling and the clingingness and the total trust and the total innocence. And it brought us back because my oldest grandchild's 35. So I've got them all in between. I mean, my oldest grandchild
plays. I know the feeling. I have one grandson, and he's 29 or 30 now. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean,
I can't keep up with them.
Mine fly down to Florida and go sail fishing with me in the Keys every year. So, and I've got them all in between. So it was really nice to have a new freshborn, a month and 2 days old, in my arms. And I said to Marilyn, you know what? This is where it's at. This means more than anything on life, to have a total dependent infant in your arms. We should just all go do it once every couple of years to sort of put our feet back on the ground where they belong. So
you know, that's That's one of the problems these days. Most people don't have their feet on the ground.
No, I think not. I think most people cannot relate. I'll tell you, and I don't think he minds if I quote him, but I went to one of the Julie Parker things about a year ago.
Yeah.
And Steve Califair, that owns all the auto dealerships and the baseball team and a bunch of other things, he said something that I have quoted him on, must have been 50 times since then. He said, when I started my business back in 1964, it was two part-timers and I rented a bay in a garage in Frenchtown.
Yeah.
He said, now I own XYZ numbers of dealerships and other enterprises. He says, back then I used to get up every Thursday morning and wonder how I was going to make payroll.
Yeah. He said, can I relate to that?
He said, today I have all of these people working for me, and every Thursday morning we have a meeting to figure out how we're going to make payroll. And he says, those sons of bitches that we've sent to Washington, I'm not sure I can say that on the air, don't give a damn one way or the other. I don't care which side of the aisle they're on. His point was, we have to change things. We can't let this go on and on and on, because I think everybody gets tuned out, and we're sending people to Washington to propagate their party or get in office or get out of office, and they're not getting anything done in the 4 to 8 years they're down.
Isn't that the truth? They don't get anything done. They just fight.
Yeah.
I don't quite get it.
I don't quite get how we keep sending
it's a different world down there. I've often thought that if we could have one law that said that whoever goes to Congress, Senate or House, has to have run a business.
I love it.
They would better understand what America is.
Oh, wow. Yes, yes.
But now we have all lawyers, or mainly lawyers, and lawyers don't understand economics or finance or business. They understand the law.
Yep.
And I understand you need that, but it leaves the rest of it sort of hanging out there.
It does. And I listened to a show between Joe Rogan. I don't know if you ever listened to him. He does a syndicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And he was interviewing Jamie Metzl, I think his name is, who's a futurist. And he's written a book about hacking the who was the guy that did the Darwin Theory? Hacking the Darwin Theory is the name of his book. I'm going to buy it and read it. But he was talking about the different people styles we have in the world, and he was talking about engineers. And he said engineers sort of work with shaded glasses on. They focus on what they're working on, and they work on it till it's finished, and they deliver it.
Yeah.
Now, it may be the part of a great big puzzle. It may be a total solution, but that's the way an engineer thinks. And he said, as a side, he says, China is now being run by engineers. And he said, so if you think anything good is going to come out of China, I don't know if he's right or wrong, he says, just think about an engineer working on something. But his point was, is that the engineer eventually does what he's supposed to do, he or she is supposed to do. Now you have a product. So the example he gave was the Manhattan Project, which was done by a bunch of engineers that didn't even speak English, that all worked for, I'm trying to think what his name was, that invented the U-2. They all came over late in the Second World War, defected to the U.S. They invented the technology for the atomic bomb without knowing what the technology was going to be used for. And when they saw the picture of the bomb being dropped and what it did, they said in German, what the F did we just do?
Yeah, yeah.
Because somebody took their beautiful invention that they invented in a vacuum and used it for a totally different reason.
Yeah. Now apply that to technology in Silicon Valley today.
Well, and that was the point he was making, is that may invent something that's really interesting, and somebody else is going to take a look at it and take it, if you're looking up and down, they're going to take it side to side and use it differently. And I think one of the things, and the basic problem we've always had here in Hunterdon County has been mass communications from a bus or even train schedule. I think you're going to take something like 5G, which is being invented to speed things up. And it's amazing. It's like 150 to 200 times faster than 4G.
Yeah.
So it means we're going to have instantaneous, no latency delay communication. For the people that understand latency delay, that's when one newscaster talks to the other and the other has to wait for half a second for it to go up to the satellite and come back down. That all disappears. So we can talk to each other with nanosecond latency.
In real time.
In real time. So now you take an invention like that and you say, wow, if we could connect the whole world, think what we could do. And you take an invention like self-driving cars, which if you put an idiot like me in a self-driving car, I guarantee you I'm going to kill somebody, maybe myself first. But what if we had the technology to the level that we had self-driving tandem buses that held maybe 80 people? And we could put that bus on an HOV and guide it using 5G at 100 miles an hour from New York to Clinton and deliver people here in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That would change the world as we know it, because our world is getting smaller and smaller and smaller in Hunterdon County as far as people moving out here. And then last year, the year before, the first time ever, we had fewer births than death for the first time. So we're just naturally losing population, much less the attrition factor, which I guess does consider death. But we need to find a way to make one of the most beautiful counties in the state, if not the most beautiful, a place where people want to commute to again. And in order to do that, it's going to take a combination, I think, of some of these technologies, because we can't just get on a road and drive. We haven't built the highway any wider since it was built 25 years ago, and we've put twice the amount of cars, if not
twice the number of cars. Yeah, yeah. I've often wondered why they didn't just go down the 78 and put what do they call those trains like they have in Orlando?
Oh yeah, tram.
The trains that go up. I mean, they already have the real estate. Why not just build it right down the middle of the 78, the highway?
Well, if you go to Chicago, they do that. They go right down the JFK Expressway between
downtown. Yeah.
You could also take a train.
Same idea. I've often thought that Hunterdon could use, in fact, I've had conversations about this with the technology, the Hack Hunterdon group is a start, but
right. It's
a long way off. The thing that the technology that it took off 5 years ago and is still growing is 3D printing.
Yes.
Of all kinds of things, and now they're I saw the other day they printed a suit. It looked like a space suit. But it was really what do they call it, a flying, you put on the suit and mess with your controls and you're suddenly airborne, single person, and go wherever you want to go.
Wow.
And it was all 3D printed. I couldn't believe it.
When I first had that technology, and it was at the Microsoft store about 5 years ago, and they were printing chess pieces
from one
place to another. And the guy said to me, he said, think about that scene from Apollo 11 where they needed a part, and he dumped everything out of a box, and he says, this is what they got to work with. You have to make one of those out of it, where we could have just broadcasted them through 5G and made it a lot faster than it is today even, a part, and they could have gone on with it. And I said, you know where this would work? Because here I am using somebody else's idea and moving on with it. I was always in retail, and we always built product in through controlled resources out of Hong Kong, but not our own employees. And we needed samples, and it took typically 6 weeks to get a sample made and delivered. So
takes forever, yeah.
What if we could print a sample, almost conceive it and make it and have it air freighted the next day or 3D printed back so that we could put it up and say, does that fit into the new fall wardrobe? I mean, there was a guy named Leslie something who owned a Limited at one point in time where he would take his stores in Atlanta, where spring happened about 6 weeks before New York, and he would start trying out new colors so that he could understand what the color was going to be for this year. So by the time New York caught up with it, he had it in production and being delivered. I mean, the man was really ahead of his time, and he wasn't using computers. He was just using geography.
Yeah, well, that's the direction. In fact, I understand a lot of the auto parts are being 3D printed these days, as are medical devices and pieces for bones.
Wow.
To be inserted in somebody's hip or leg or whatever. You can 3D print just about anything as long as you've got the computer engineers there.
So it seems to me like we have a whole bunch of people working on tangential projects around the world. And one of them is 3D printing, and one of them is 5G, and one of them is self-driving cars.
Yeah.
We need somebody with a business sense to put a few of them together to help us do some things that we can't do. And one of our biggest ones has always been commuting faster to New York, because that's where the work is at. If you're not going to New York, you're not earning decent money. And that's where really thought process is at. The think tanks are in New York. There was an example. I listened to this fellow who does the Hayden Planetarium, Neil deGrasso, if I'm saying his name right.
Neil deGrasso, yeah.
Yeah, and he is such a soothing voice, he puts me to sleep, which is another problem, because I fall asleep really easily these days. But he was doing this in point five of his Cosmos series. He did the thing about Newton, doing all of these inventions that Newton figured out. And Newton didn't just invent gravity. He's responsible for about half of our physics in the world today. And he got in an argument with his professor, and his professor wanted to take credit for what he did. So Newton quit, and for 14 years, he didn't go back into academia, but he still maintained the knowledge, and he really felt it wasn't worth much, and he was going to throw it away. But his professor either passed on or retired, and he went back and took his job and then published all of this. Where would we be without that today? We would have had to restart all of that thought process that came out of one man that contributed so much to us. And that's really the same as building on the shoulders of the person that went before you. How do you take what they invented and just do something else with it to make our life better? So what are the problems we have in Hunterdon County? One of the problems is we're losing people. The second problem is jobs. There just are no jobs here.
So the job market is critical to maintaining population or attracting people in.
And then I think the third one is it's expensive to live out here. That's a New Jersey problem more than the Hunterdon County problem. So how do we solve some of that? I think, and I'm going to go Thursday night, they're having the presentation of the top three from the Hack Hunterdon over at the Hackathon meeting. So I want to go over and watch it, because I was out in L.A. that weekend and didn't get to see it firsthand. But I think it's within our grasp to, as society, to couple of these things together. I used couple twice, but to sort of cobble a few of these things together to make one good solution. And one would be mass transportation. Another would be, how do we get people to work right here? And I think 5G solves that, because 20 years ago I worked for a company called SAP, and I would go to a site that was right across from Metroliner Station in Island, New Jersey. And on one wall were six engineers in India talking to six engineers here in the United States. And at 6 in the morning, they turned the project over to the guys in the United States. And at 6 at night, they returned to the table and they turned the project back over. And they worked on this project 24 hours a day in order to beat the competition.
Yeah.
5G is going to make that so you can do it right out of your house. You don't even have to go to the office anymore.
Yeah. It's amazing what technology has done. And then you think about where it can go or will go.
Right. And then I hear these astute observations like, we're going to bring Google and Facebook, and I'm not saying these are wonderful companies, but we're going to name Google and Facebook and name three or four, and we're going to have Congress investigate them. These guys can't investigate themselves.
They don't understand. That's ridiculous. The people in Congress don't understand the company or the business.
Right, right. And it was, I think it was Maxine Waters, not one of my favorites, but she had the whole bunch of people, and she was saying that we're losing jobs because of this is not happening. And she says, nobody's leaving this room until I understand who's responsible for this not happening. And one of the people in the back row raised and said, Ms. Waters, that's your department's responsibility.
That's your job.
It's a circular screw-up.
It's amazing. I wonder what Congress is going to end up doing with Google and Facebook and Twitter and whatever. I was reading today that they've just found that Google has been really playing around with their algorithms and did so during the Clinton-Trump campaigns.
Wow.
Which the answer, if you take all of that to Congress will say, okay, bust them up.
Yeah. That's easy to say. What do you mean?
Yeah. What does that mean? What are you going to end up with? What next? Too many people today don't ask that next question.
Right.
What happens then? You got a great idea to do something or invent something or whatever, and nobody asks, well, wait a minute, what is that? What effect is that going to have on the rest? And what will we end up with if we do this?
Well,
not many people ask that question.
No, they don't, because I came out of a world of and I was in retail all my life, which was, as I said earlier, not leading edge, but was really easy for somebody to say, this is this way, it should be that way. I said, that's a great observation. Now, do you have a plan to take it from this way to that
way?
Yeah,
what's the plan?
Well, no, that's what we need. I said, well, I could have figured as much out as you just told me. What do you think, you're a genius? Come back when you got the plan.
Exactly. People get little ideas and then run with them and really try to implement them, and with no thought as to where they're headed,
right,
or what will happen next as a result of whatever it is you're doing.
And it's really saying the same thing you said, which is, well, if you did that, what would happen? And based on that, what would you do next?
Exactly. What are the alternatives? And every plan has a possibility of failing or succeeding.
Yes.
And either way, it opens up new opportunities, new directions, which you have to think about before jumping in.
I agree. And, you know, nobody has a crystal ball that they can see all the ramifications or just how it's going to turn out.
Nobody can see everything. Of course not. But at least you think about it.
We're not funding.
I think one of the problems, Joe, is one of the big problems I see, having lived more than 80 years, is we don't teach kids how to, number one, work, and number two, think critically. Those two things are missing in our culture. We have tremendous numbers of laws against child labor. Well, I grew up on a farm. I went to work when I was 6 years old. It was a dairy farm, and it meant the cows had to be milked, you know?
Right.
But kids today are protected to the point that they get out of high school, and they have never, not everybody, but for the most part, they have never really done any actual work on anything other than maybe computer games, which they got into themselves. But the other part of that, the other end of that, is when you learn how to work when you're very young, you set yourself up to think critically. You think beyond the next item.
Right.
So, and in schools these days, we're busily, it seems to me, inculcating all kinds of social things as opposed to practical. And I'm not especially talking about technology here. I'm just talking about practical things. Why aren't kids interested in plumbing and electrical work, which you can earn just about as much as you can as a computer programmer?
Right.
Why aren't they interested in those things? Well, not much is taught about that in the high school. Now, you get to the technical schools, and they do a credible job, but in the high schools or the grammar school, the lower grades, the emphasis seems to be on anti-bullying programs, and can we find a grief counselor? I mean, these things are important. Don't misunderstand me. I wouldn't do away with them, but it seems to me the emphasis is there as opposed to other things which in life turn out to be more important.
Well, I got to tell you,
everybody suffers a bullying experience at one point in their life. You learn to deal with it. Now, that may not be the best way, and maybe we need to have some counseling along the way, and maybe all kinds of things. But the same is with grief. We all are going to die, so why spend a lot of time? It seems to me, in helping people to learn how to grieve. What do you mean, learn how to grieve? It's an everyday occurrence, and when it happens, it's terrible. I don't misunderstand here, but the fact that we spend an inordinate amount of time on those types of things as opposed to the practical nature of living day to day, you know?
Well, I think one of the big misgivings we have, which is part of the building the foundation, is that our educational system is broken.
It is, yeah.
So I go back to a fellow I've heard speak several times in the last year, and he's on a committee with me, Mike McDonough, who runs our VCC. And Mike says, we take 40,000 kids a year and ship them out of New Jersey to a four-year college because that's where mom and dad went, and they get a degree in something like mom and dad got that we can't possibly use when they're all done. And
when
at the end of it.
And besides, they borrowed money, now they got a big bill to pay.
At the end of it, they're out of state. They're not coming back for the most part. They've run up $250,000 in debt. They haven't earned a penny. And what Mike says is you can come to RVCC. Now, these jobs that these kids got, for the greatest part, will pay $75,000 a year.
Yeah.
He says, you can go to RVC and go through 2 years plus about 12 additional technical credits, and I could put you to work in Somerset County for $100,000.
Sure.
Why would you go do what you're doing when I can do this? But we've incented the counselors in the high schools to do what they're doing, get them into four-year colleges. So if three-quarters of all the jobs we're going to have in 20 years, we can't even conceive what they are today, what good is college almost? I mean, yeah, you need the
basics.
You need some of the basics. But
when I told my father that I wanted, he asked me when I was 16 years old, he said, do you want the dairy farm? If you do, I'll keep it, and you, it's yours. But he said, when you're 18, what do you plan to do with your life? He sat me down, and I said, I'm going to college, and the first words out of his mouth were, number one, who's going to pay for it, and number two, they'll ruin your mind.
Yes.
I've never forgotten that. He was a wise man. He never went past the seventh grade, but he could solve algebra problems in his head.
Well, and he had what most kids don't have today, and that is a good work ethic to start with, to realize this is going to take work.
Exactly. Apply yourself and keep going.
So, I mean, if the two things are have a good work ethic and think critically, having a good work ethic comes from your upbringing. And
sure.
I know, as part of Leadership Hutterton, we went to a dairy farm, the Culper Dairy Farm, if I remember. And these guys would get up and milk the cows, get them out in the field, go drive the school buses, get the kids to school, come back, work on a farm to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, go drive the school buses the other way, bring the cows back in, milk them, have dinner, go to bed, and tomorrow they got up and did the same thing again and again and again, because if they didn't, nobody was going to do it for them.
With no holidays from the cows.
No.
I remember, you've described my growing up.
Yeah.
Except for the school bus.
So I was just totally blown away. We also went to a woman who has a farm in Alexandria, if I remember right. And she gets up and she has all of these farm, some relatives, some hired hands, and they get all of this stuff grown and picked depending on the season, ready to put it on a truck. They take it to New York. They sell it at the farmer's market. And tomorrow morning they get up and do it all over again.
Sure.
And there's no relief. There's no vacation. There's nobody to relieve you when you're sick. There's no I go home at 4 o'clock.
No, that's
farming, and farming is a great work ethic to have come up with.
It absolutely is. I have no interest in it, but I can see the value of it. I really appreciate the fact that I grew up that way. But it trains you to always figure out what you're doing and how to do it better.
And then thinking critically is just as important. And I don't think we do anything that I can think of other than maybe scouts and special interest groups in helping children think critically.
Yeah, it's a disservice to the kids.
Right.
It really is. And add to that, I think just about all of college is a disservice to kids. I really don't see. It's a playtime. They've grown up with no work ethic.
Right.
They go to college. They play. I did the same thing. I know what that's all about. And I studied, but I had to put my own self through college. My dad refused to pay it.
Wow.
But you learn as you grow up, and we really do a disservice to kids by saying they can't work until they're 16 or so.
Totally agree. Totally agree. I think I see kids working in their parents' business. They're allowed to work.
Yeah.
And I think they're the ones that probably have the best work ethic going because they don't know any difference. Mom and Dad go to work, and by the time I was four, I was tagging along.
Sure. I spent a couple of weeks in Portugal once, and I was impressed with the way the kids were always with their parents in the business, the restaurant, the whatever they were doing, but they were always tagging along. They were always helping out, learning, doing.
Yep. I got to admit, the cultures in other parts of the world, I think, are far advanced of ours. Because look, we give the kids a trophy for showing up. They didn't do a damn thing.
Exactly.
Why should they be rewarded?
About giving everybody a trophy?
Yeah. And then I understand.
I can't wrap my head around that.
After 9/11, there was a real hug your kid. You know, my God, we didn't get hurt by this thing. Okay, that was worth it for a couple of months. But, you know, here we are 10 years later, 15 years later. Get over it. We didn't walk 3.5 miles in the snow to school, but we did. I see people lined up coming in the north. There must be 200 cars in line on 78 trying to get in to pick their kid up from school.
Yeah.
Couldn't a kid at least walk to the side street so he didn't have to sit in the line? It's beyond me what we're doing to make these children not know how to work and not know how, as you say, think strategically because we're not giving them the tools they need. So
and
then
they don't have the tools. It's a real disservice to the kids. I see it every time I see a kid.
So then they
I have a kid next door.
Yep.
Which he's about 14. And he's always on his phone, and I talked to his mother this morning, and she said, I'm trying to get him to cut the grass. I said, hit him up beside the head, get his attention, and then get him out there and keep him busy. He needs to lose weight.
Right.
You can tell he spent a lot of time on a computer.
And lose the phone. I mean, Marilyn retired from Rutgers a little prematurely, and she still had some cycles left. She said, I need something to do. So she's in Costco handing out free samples.
Uh-huh.
It's a job that gets her where she's good at talking to people. And she says, Joe, I'm required to have a phone so we can text back and forth if we have a problem or if we have an issue, but I'm not allowed to look at it. I can be fired for looking at my phone. I said, that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
You see, all these the guy that's pumping your gas is looking at your phone. The guy that's doing whatever is looking at his phone.
Yeah, you need to be talking to a customer.
Yes.
Exactly.
It makes... We've lost the concept of right and wrong in the mission of trying to make ourselves overprotected. And I'm not so sure we need to be that protected, ourselves or our children.
I don't think so. I think you're absolutely, you hit the nail on the head. We do not need to be so protective.
So I look at, we watch a lot of nature shows, and, you know, the animals get up in the morning and the first thing they want to do is eat. And if they can possibly do it, not get eaten themselves. So it's a way of life that we were hunters and gatherers like that. You chose one or the other. And in effect, we don't. We get up thinking the world owes us something. And little by little, the world isn't giving us that anymore because we're not paying people benefits the way we used to pay. They're not getting, I mean, the generation, this generation that's working between 30 and 40 are making a third less than a generation before them. So we're not paying them as much as they used to get paid.
Yeah.
And there's this attitude, there's a whole attitude of I'm smart and you're not. I don't know where that came from. It's beyond me, because one of my superiors published a little note saying that he has these little philosophical notes he puts out is question everything because you may be wrong. And if you don't question everything, you're going to go on based on your premise that you think is right that's really wrong, and you're going nowhere. You're going to do harm to it. But no, we don't think that way.
Well, not only should you question everything, you should also test it.
Yes.
If you test the things, then you can move ahead. If you don't test, you just question and accept. You know, we have politicians right now running around trying to give away freebies, which is understandable because that's where the culture is, I think, unfortunately, that everybody's looking for something for nothing. Which, again, that gets back to the work ethic. They don't have a work ethic, and so they just think everything is free. And the point is, nobody seems to think beyond that. Who pays? Because
right.
Somebody always pays for everything.
Unless we go into a socialistic environment, which I don't think anybody, except a few radicals, want us to do.
I don't get it with the politics. All they're really doing is pretty transparent to me. They're just trying to buy votes.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Okay, one of our politicians, he'll go unnamed, but his initials are Bernie, said yesterday, we're going to forgive all the college debt. It's going to cost us $1.5 trillion, and we're going to get it back by taxing
stock. That's the wrong end of the donkey there.
Right. You're teaching them a bad habit already.
If you want to get at college debt, look at the colleges. Why do they charge so much for professors who give one lecture a month?
And so what is he really doing? What you said, he's buying votes. And,
argument
that I love is, wait a minute, I just paid my college debt off after 14 years. How about me?
How about the people who've already paid it?
Yeah, well, we haven't thought that out that far.
Nobody asks those questions,
no,
Joe.
No. Not when you're trying to buy votes. So, Al, what are you seeing this year? It's a year since we talked. What are you seeing different in Hunterdon County?
I was going to ask you how the home sales were going. I read in the Wall Street Journal, I think yesterday, that nationally existing home sales have been up in last month. I think they said 2.5% or something. But I wondered about existing home sales as opposed to new home sales, how they're holding up in Hunterdon, Somerset.
Well, it depends where you're at, and it depends on your price point. First things first, we don't have any new construction. Unless you're up in the 700s, because you have to buy a piece of land and put up a 3,600 square foot, our zoning says so you can't put kids into the school system. 10 years, 20 years outdated thinking. So we're not building anything at the low end. But under 400, a clean house in a good area like Clinton Township, Raritan Township, Reddington Township, where you're somewhat reasonable in distance to getting to the east, because you have to go to the east to earn
a
living.
You have to go east, yeah.
And they're doing okay. If you had that same house out in Frenchtown or the far ends of Alexandria or down into the Hopewells or Amwells, I should say, they're not doing okay because we don't. It's a supply and demand. People don't want to live there. Where do you go from the Amwell to work? You can go to Princeton. You can go to Philadelphia. It's too far to go to New York. But the houses, when you get to 500, bump into something that they aren't expecting. All right, the kids are gone. I painted the place up. I patched the driveway. I've got a nice $500,000 house. Let's put it on the market. Well, what they're bumping into is we have sixes and sevens that can't sell, and they're moving downstream. So now you're
competing. They're moving down, yeah.
You're competing with houses that are of much more value than yours, and they go first for a few dollars more.
Yeah.
So it's taken a while to sell things. If If we look at Hunterdon County in general, it's a 5-month, and that's average, and that's good, a 5-month time frame to sell houses. We have 5 months of supply. But if you
are you noticing any difference with the mortgage rates being so low?
Yeah, it's helped a lot.
I saw this morning that the 10-year Treasury was 1.98.
Wow.
Below 2, and that has to do with the mortgage rates. They set them based on the 10-year?
Yep, they're coupled. They're coupled. Yeah. So there were three things that had to happen this year in order for us to have a good year in real estate. One was we needed jobs, and we've got them. There's not a door that you walk through that doesn't say help wanted. And our minimum wage is a de facto $15 an hour. We're paying that to start at Costco. We're paying that roughly to start no matter where you go. So that's an argument we even need to, at least in Hunterdon and Somerset County. The second thing we needed was inventory. Inventory built up through the December, January, February timeframe, but it built up in the over 500 market. So that gives people room to move up because they couldn't find inventory last year. And then one or two houses will sell. A 400 sale will move up to a 550, 600. A 200 sale will move up to the 400. So it creates a couple of sales, but we're not building anything at the lower level other than these affordable housing units, whole other subject matter. We could spend a whole show on that.
That's a whole different world.
Then the third thing we needed, so we needed inventory, we needed jobs,
we needed
interest.
Good paying jobs.
Interest to hold. Well, the jobs are paying better. They're not starting where they could buy a house, but they're starting because of what we just talked about at a higher level, and that's good. And we need interest rates. So interest rates have dropped from 4.9 to 3.5 yesterday. 3.5. Yeah, that's almost back to where the last election was. It was 3.375 when the man got elected. Yeah. And I'm not saying he's good or bad. That's just a time slice. At that point, they were 3.75. So all three things come together. Now what we have is a supply and demand. We have too many houses where we don't have buyers, and we have not enough houses where we have too many buyers. So the not enough houses are in the threes and fours, twos, threes, and fours. Yeah. And too many houses are above seven. We must
are way up there.
Way up there. I'm just looking at the quick statistic. Above 700,000, we have 100. We have 200 houses over 700,000. And last month, in that same price point, we sold 14 of them. You divide one into the other, and that's a long time to sell your house. But if you go down and look in the 200s, we got a 3-month supply. 300s, 3-month supply. 400s, 3-month supply. That's where we don't have enough houses because we haven't built anything in the 250 to 400 range in the last 15 to 20 years. And if we had more, we could sell more, but we don't. So something very interesting is happening, and that is that 2/3 of all our starts last year by unit in New Jersey was rental properties. Two-thirds were, I guess, rental properties. So now we're building rentals like crazy, more to the east, more like in Hillsboro than in Hunterdon. Yeah. But it's going to lead to something that I don't know what we're going to do with, and that is a glut of rental properties eventually.
Because and then you're going to have a glut of those,
Yeah.
So well, don't these things go in cycles, Joe, with overbuilding and then down?
So we don't have enough affordable senior living.
And well, what we need is companies to come in that are going to pay big time salaries and hire 100 people, and that is hard to come by.
That is, I think Mark Salek has helped a little there.
Maybe with all the trade shakeup, something will begin to happen. What is the new company that bought the old Merck complex?
Yes, I'm trying to come up with their
Global
name.
Global. I can't remember the name. Are they in there yet?
They are in there, and they're going to bring like 1,200 people in on a drive-in basis. They're not relocating them. I think some of them will decide to move on their own or through company help eventually.
Well, they're going to bring in 1,200 people. They're going to pay good salaries, but that ought to help your market.
I think it will. And Exxon's bringing about 300
Exxon
people.
Exxon is expanding, yeah.
Exxon's, the level of people Exxon's bringing is a little lower than what Hunterdon County needs. I would say they're like an engineer in the $80,000 to $100,000 range. That person can afford a $400,000 house. We have excess above $500,000. So it's good. It's nothing to sneer at, but it's not helping us where we need the help. I think that the answer becomes we have a glut of houses that cost too much, and we have a deficiency in houses that are just right, the Goldilocks thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know how to solve it. I really don't. I do the best I can to exist within it.
It's a difficult problem, and it won't be solved overnight.
No, no. And I think it's going to take a good, healthy, concentrated effort between not only Hunterdon, but Somerset County and New Jersey in general. Al, we're out of time, believe it or not.
You're kidding.
Yeah, wow. Seems like we just started.
Okay.
How about if we do this again in 4 weeks and pick up from here?
Okay, good, Joe.
I'll set a date with you off time.
Always enjoy speaking with you.
Yeah, I feel the same, and I appreciate you coming on with me because you have so much insight and you're so thought-provoking with your observations of things, but this has been Al War. Say hello or goodbye, Al.
Yeah, goodbye.
And this is Joe Peters, and we're going to sign off. We'll be back next week with another interesting subject matter. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks, Joe.
Al, I appreciate it. I'll talk to you in between.
Okay.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
President Trump says he expects Congress will provide funding to help the U.S. improve conditions for migrant children detained along the southern border. He says Mexico is now helping.
Mexico has been really helping us a lot. They have very strong immigration laws. They are moving 15,000 people or 16,000 people to our southern border, and they move 16,000 troops to their southern border, which is pretty incredible.
The acting head of Customs and Immigration, John Sanders, has now resigned. Kevin McAleenan left to fill the role at the head of the Homeland Security Department, and Sanders has been the acting commissioner. He is chosen to step down. The Washington Post reports Mark Morgan, the acting head of ICE, will replace Sanders. On Wall Street, the Dow is down 179, the NASDAQ down 121. This is USA Radio News.
So you sit down and do your budget, and you look at all your monthly costs and your bills and your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. That is the typical savings, $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your health care. And when it comes to healthcare sharing ministries, MediShare is really the gold standard. It's been around for 25 years and has more than 400,000 members. It's been around so long and grown so much because it works. And whether you're single or married or have kids, this could make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. $500 a month can more than cover a car payment or payback loans, whatever. So join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Here's the number to call. They are incredibly kind and helpful to talk to. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
The standoff between the Trump administration and Iran has widened after Iranian President Hassan Rouhani accused the White House of a mental disability. He spoke through an interpreter.
They had become frustrated and confused. They did not know what to do. They do strange things that no sane person in the history of world politics has done, or at least I don't remember. This is because of their total confusion. They have become mentally disabled. The White House is suffering from mental disability.
New Acting Defense Secretary Mark Esper is flying to Europe to talk to leaders and try and persuade NATO allies to support new U.S. sanctions against Iran. 18 soldiers at Fort Bragg had to be rushed to the hospital after they collapsed in the North Carolina heat. Retired Army Major Mike Lyons explains.
My experience with Fort Bragg at this time of year, tremendous humidity, especially early in the morning.
You're listening to USA Radio News.